Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, an educational service in the public interest. Your host, Rick Gordon. Now, the Law Hour is heard live daily, 7 days a week, and worldwide on the Internet. For information about the Law Hour and Gordon Law School, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Law Hour brings you important information about law news, education, medicine, economics, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on brainwashing right after this message. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But you know, you and I do not have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property, not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for example, is neither accorded to the passive resistant, nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? It's not accorded to one who is indifferent thereto, because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It's valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. Now, that's a direct citation from U.S. v. Johnson. Now, I contend we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Rights are claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person, and no one else. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Well, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about brainwashing. Brainwashing, which was institutionalized in the United States back in the 1920s. It has been more than institutionalized. It has been brought down to a fine art, a science. And what we see going on in Baghdad isn't something that just occurred because of seven renegade privates, private first class. It's an institution that was begun in Marion, Ohio, in the federal prison as an experiment on human subjects. Now, of course, the communists have used it, and we're reading a communist textbook on psychopolitics here. But don't think that psychopolitics is something that was invented by Lavrenti Beria or the communists. It was invented here in the West, in the United States of America, and exported to the Soviet Union, where it has been used on populations around the world, and it is still being used on populations around the world. And the objective, by taking those Afghanis out of Afghanistan and removing them to Guantanamo Bay, fits every one of the 23 indicia that have been developed in Marion Prison, the federal prison in Marion, Ohio, for brainwashing those people. What you saw going on in the prison, in the current scandal in Baghdad, is a part and parcel with a psychological methodology adopted by our Defense Department for the purposes of brainwashing those prisoners. It does not come from seven low-ranking guards, at the prison. It comes from the Secretary of Defense. It comes from the generals. It comes from the establishment. It is a part and parcel of the American military fighting force, just as much as it's a part and parcel with the Russian fighting military force or the British fighting military force. It's a part and parcel with war and warfare. Let's take a look at the history and the definition of psychopolitics. Although punishment for its own sake may not be entirely without recompense, it is nevertheless true that the end and goal of all punishment is the indoctrination of the person being punished with an idea, whether that idea be one of restraint or obedience. In that any ruler has, from time beyond memory, needed the obedience of his subjects in order to accomplish his end, he has thus resorted to punishment. This is true of every tribe and state in the history of man. Today, Russian culture has evolved more certain and definite methods of aligning and securing the loyalties of persons and population, and of enforcing obedience upon them. This modern outgrowth of the old practice is called psychopolitics. The stupidity and the narrowness of nations not blessed with Russian reasoning has caused them to rely upon practices which are today too ancient and outmoded for the rapid and heroic pace of our time. And in view of the tremendous advance of Russian culture in the field of mental technologies begun with the glorious work of Pavlov and carried forward so ably by later Russians, it would be strange that an art and science would not evolve totally devoted to the aligning of loyalties and extracting the obedience of individuals and multitudes. Thus we see that psychopolitical procedures are a natural outgrowth of practices as old as men, practices which are current in every group of men throughout the world. Thus, in psychopolitical procedures, there is no ethical problem, since it is obvious and evident that man is always coerced against his will to the greater good of the state, whether by economic gains or indoctrination into the wishes and desires of that state. I want you to notice here that we're using the word psychopolitics. That's the buzzword for brainwashing. Brainwashing is the street vernacular that we use. But the scientific terms are called psychopolitics. So remember that. We're dealing with psychopolitics, not brainwashing. It's the same when we deal with torture. God banish torture from your vocabulary. It's called pain compliance. Pain compliance, not torture. Now, basically, man is an animal. He is an animal which has been given a civilized veneer. Man is a collective animal, grouped together for his own protection before the threat of the environment. Those who so group and control him must then have in their possession specialized techniques. Combines readily with psychopolitical actions, and particularly where the greed of capitalistic or monarchical regimes has already brought about an overwhelming incidence of neurosis, which can be employed as the groundwork for psychopolitical action and the psychopolitical core. Now, those who so group and control men, then, must have in their possession specialized techniques to direct the vagaries and energies of the animal that we know as man toward greater efficiency in the accomplishment of the goals of the state. Psychopolitics, in one form or another, have long been used in Russia, but the subject has all been unknown outside the borders of our nation, save only where we have carefully transplanted our information and where it is used for the greater good of the nation. The definition of psychopolitics: psychopolitics is the art and science of asserting and maintaining dominion over the thoughts and loyalties of individuals, officers, bureaus, and masses, and the effecting of the conquest of enemy nations through mental healing. The subject of psychopolitics breaks down into several categories, each a natural and logical proceeding from the last. Its first subject is the constitution and anatomy of man himself as a political organism. The next is an examination of man as an economic organism, as this might be controlled by his desires. The next is classification of state goals for the individual and masses. The next is an examination of loyalty. The next is the general subject of obedience. The next is the anatomy of the stimulus response mechanisms of man. And the next is the subjects of shock and endurance. The next is categories of experience. The next is the catalyzing and aligning of experience. The next is the use of drugs. And the next is the use of implantation. The next is the general application of the psychopolitics of Russia. The next is organization and use of counter-psychopolitics. The next is the use of psychopolitics in the conquest of foreign nations. The next is psychopolitical organizations outside Russia, their composition and activity. The next is the creation of slave philosophy in the hostile nation. The next is countering anti-psychopolitical activities abroad. And the final one, the destiny of psychopolitical rule in the scientific age. To this might be added many subcategories, such as the nullification of modern weapons by psychopolitical activity. The strength and power of psychopolitics cannot be overestimated, particularly when used in a nation decayed by pseudo-intellectualism, where exploitation of the masses binds readily with psychopolitical actions, and particularly where the breed of capitalistic or monarchical regimes has already brought about an overwhelming incidence of neurosis, which can be employed as the groundwork for psychopolitical action and psychopolitical course. And it is part of our mission, students, to prevent psychopolitical activity to the detriment of the Russian state, just as it is your mission to carry forward in our nation and outside of it, if you're so assigned the mission goal of psychopolitics. Right, that's what we're learning. Our brainwash. We learned it. All right, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Wharton. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Well, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedures class. This class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. You can learn this rule one. You can win about 86% of your legal cases. Now, all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. Now, listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation and, indeed, in some cases, police intimidation. The first judge said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" That comes from United States versus Dickerson. The second judge said, "You can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment," in Belknap versus United States. The third judge put it this way. He said, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the far-sighted," in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me direct, 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Then click on to the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about brainwashing. It's called psychopolitics in the mainstream of the psychopolitical brainwashers. brainwashing is called a synthesis of Russian textbook on psychopolitics. Psychopolitics, the art and science of asserting and maintaining dominion over the thoughts and loyalties of individuals, officers, bureaus, and masses, and the effecting of the conquest of any nations through mental healing. Now, the constitution of man as a political organism. Remember, they're calling man an animal. This is based upon evolutionary philosophy. Remember, the communists, and indeed our anti-God government in the United States, believes in evolutionary philosophy. We teach it in our public schools. We indoctrinate our children. You've been indoctrinated with this anti-God, anti-Bible philosophy. I'm not going to say that you're brainwashed. I can't tell you. Why don't you determine for yourself whether or not of the 23 indicia for brainwashing have been used upon you, and have you been brainwashed? And if so, is there any recovery from it? Is there a God? And if you believed in God, could you withstand this brainwashing technology or technique being employed against you? No, it's gone. Man is already a colonial aggregation of cells, and to consider him an individual would be an error. Colonies of cells have gathered together as one organ or another of the body, and then these organs have themselves gathered together to form the whole. Thus we see that man himself is already a political organism, even if we do not consider a mass of men. Sickness could be considered to be a disloyalty to the remaining organisms on the part of one organism. This disloyalty becoming apparent brings about a revolt of some part of the anatomy against the remaining whole, and thus we have in effect an internal revolution. The heart becoming disaffected falls away from close membership service to the remainder of the organism, and we discover the entire body and all of its activities is disrupted because of the revolutionary activity of the heart. The heart is in revolt because it cannot or will not cooperate with the remainder of the body. If we permit the heart thus to revolt, the kidneys, taking the example of the heart, may in their turn rebel and cease to work for the good of the organism. This rebellion, multiplying to other organs and the glandular system, brings about the death of the individual. We can see with ease that the revolt is death, that the revolt of any part of the organism results in death. Thus, we see that there can be no compromise with rebellion. It must be put down. Now, like the individual man, the state is a collection of aggregations. Political entities within the state must all of them cooperate for the greater good of the state, lest the state itself fall asunder and die. For with the disaffection of any single distrust, we discover an example set for other districts. We discover at length the entire state fallen. This is the danger of revolution. Now look at the planet Earth, and we see here one entire organism. The organism of Earth is an individual organism. Earth has as its organs the various races and nations of men. Where one of these is permitted to remain disaffected, Earth itself is threatened with death. The threatened rebellion of one country, no matter how small, against the total organism of Earth, would find Earth sick in the cultural state of man to suffer in consequence. Thus, the illness of capitalist states spreading their pus and bacteria into the healthy countries of the world would not do otherwise than bring about the death of Earth, unless these ill organisms are brought into loyalty and obedience, made to function for the greater good of the worldwide state. The constitution of man is so composed that the individual cannot function efficiently without the alignment of each and every part and organ of his anatomy. As the average individual is incapable in an informed and uncultured state, as witness the barbarians of the jungle, so must he be trained into a coordination of his organic functions by exercise, education, and work toward specific goals. We particularly and specifically note that the individual must be directed from without to accomplish his exercise, education, and work. He must be made to realize this, for only then can he be made to function efficiently in the role assigned to him. The tenets of the past rugged individualism, personal determination, self-will, imagination, and personal creativeness are alike in the masses, antipathetic to the good of the greater good of the state. These willful and unaligned forces are no more than illnesses which will bring about disaffection, disunity, and at length the collapse of the group to which the individual is attached. The constitution of man lends itself easily and thoroughly to certain positive regulation from without of all of its functions, including those of thinking and obedience, loyalty, and these things must be controlled if a greater state is to ensue. Now, while it may seem desirable to the surgeon to amputate one or another limb or organ in order to save the remainder, it must be pointed out that this expediency is not entirely possible accomplishment where one considers entire nations. A body deprived of organs can be observed to be lessened in its effectiveness. The world deprived of the workers, now enslaved by the insane and nonsensical idiocies of capitalists and monarchists of the earth, would, if removed, create a certain disloyalty, disability in the worldwide state. Just as we see the victor forced to rehabilitate the population of a conquered country at the end of the war, thus any effort to depopulate a disaffected portion of the world might have some consequence. However, let us consider the inroad of virus and bacteria hostile to the organism, and we see that unless we can conquer this germ, the organ or organism which it is attacking will itself suffer. If any state we have certain individuals, or in any state we have certain individuals who operate in the role of the virus of the germ, and these attacking the population or any group within the population produced by their self-willed greed, a sickness in the organ which then generally spreads to the whole organ. The constitution of man as an individual body, or the constitution of a state or a portion of the state as a political organism, are analogous. It is the mission of psychopolitics first to align the obedience and goals of the group and then maintain their alignment by the eradication of the effectiveness of the persons and personalities which might serve the group toward disaffection. In our own nation, where things are better managed and where reason reigns above all else, it is not difficult to eradicate self-willed bacteria which might attack one of our political entities. But in the field of conquest, in nations less enlightened than we, where the Russian state does not yet have power, it is not as feasible to remove the entire self-willed individual. Psychopolitics makes it possible to remove that part of his personality, which in itself is making havoc with the person's own constitution, as well as the group with which the person is connected. If the man-animal were permitted to continue undisturbed by counter-revolutionary propaganda, if he were left to work under the well-planned management of the state, he would discover little sickness amongst men, and we would discover no sickness in our state. But where the individual is troubled by conflicting propaganda, where he is made the effect of revolutionary activity, where he is permitted to think thoughts critical of the state itself, where he is permitted to question those in whose natural charge he falls, we would discover his constitution to suffer. We would discover from this disaffection the additional disaffection of his heart and other portions of his anatomy. So certain is this principle that when one finds a sick individual, could one search deeply enough, we would discover a misaligned loyalty and an interpreted and interrupted obedience to that person's group unit. There are those who foolishly have embarked upon some spiritual Alice in Wonderland voyage into what they call the subconscious or the unconscious mind, and who under the guise of psychotherapy would seek to make well the disaffection of body organs. But it is to be noted that their results are singularly lacking in success. There's no strength in such an approach. When hypnotism was first invented in Russia, it was observed that all that was necessary was to command the unresisting individual to be well in order, many times, to accomplish that fact. The limitation of hypnotism was that many subjects were not susceptible to the hypnotic use, and thus hypnotism has had to be improved upon in order to increase the suggestibility of individuals who would not otherwise and could otherwise not be reached. Thus, any nation has had the experience of growing well again as a whole organism when placing sufficient force in play against the disaffected group. Just as in hypnotism, any organ can be commanded into greater loyalty and obedience, so can any political group be commanded into greater loyalty and obedience should sufficient force be employed. However, force often brings about destruction, and it is occasionally not feasible to use broad mass force to accomplish the ends in view. Thus, it is necessary to align the individual against his desire not to conform. Just as it is a recognized truth that man must conform to his environment, so it is a recognized truth and will become more so as the years proceed, and even the body of man can be commanded into health. The constitution of man renders itself particularly adapted and peculiarly adapted to realignment of loyalty. And where these loyalties are indigestible to the constitution of the individual itself, such as loyalties to the petite bourgeoisie, the capitalist, to anti-Russian ideas, we find the individual body peculiarly susceptible to sickness. Thus, we can clearly understand the epidemics, the illnesses, the mass neuroses, the tumults, and the confusion of the United States and other capitalist countries. Here we find the worker improperly and incorrectly loyal, and thus we find the worker ill. To save him and establish him correctly and properly upon his goal toward a greater socialist state, it is an overpowering necessity to make it possible for him to grant his loyalties in a correct direction. In that his loyalties are swerved and his obedience cravenly demanded by persons antipathetic to his general good, and in that these persons are few, even a capitalist nation, the goal and direction of psychopolitics is clearly understood. To benefit the worker in such a plight, it is necessary to eradicate by general propaganda and by other means, and by his own cooperation, self-willingness of converted leaders. Necessary as well to indoctrinate the educated strata into the tenet principles of cooperation with the environment. All right, talking about brainwashing, psychopolitics, and by, we'll be back with more on the return. Welcome back. You're listening to Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. Again, this is georgegordon.org. There's tonight's wise old saying, a man who buys from you once is good business. A man who buys from you again, twice, is the best. Psychopolitics. Psychopolitics is brainwashing. Brainwashing is the street lingo that we use. Brainwashing is a synthesis of the Russian textbook on psychopolitics. The Russian textbook on psychopolitics was developed by Sigmund Freud and others here in the United States starting at the turn of the century. Psychopolitics has been expanded by the Russians. And it has been inferred that the Russians discovered it. It's true that the Russians have used it, the Chinese, North Koreans, but it's being used around the world. But the people who are the pioneers of psychopolitics or brainwashing are the British and the Americans. And what you see going on in Guantanamo Bay fits the 23 indice of brainwashing, first pioneered in the United States at the federal prison in Marion, Illinois. Now, man is an economic organism, they tell us. Man is subject to certain desires and needs, which are as natural to his being as they are to that of any other animal. Man, however, has the peculiarity of exaggerating some of these beyond the bounds of reason. This is obvious through the growth of the leisure class, pseudo-intellectual group, the petite bourgeoisie, capitalism, and other illnesses. Now, it's been said with truth that one-tenth of a man's life concerned with politics, nine-tenths with economics. Without food, the individual dies. Without clothing, he freezes. Without houses and weapons, he is prey to the starving wolf. The acquisition of sufficient items to answer these necessities of food, clothing, and shelter in reason is the natural right of a member of an enlightened state. An excess of such items brings about unrest and disquiet. The presence of luxury items and materials and the artificial creation and the whetting of appetites, as in capitalist advertising, are certain to accentuate the less desirable characteristics of man. The individual is an economic organism in that he requires a certain amount of food, a certain amount of water, must hold within himself a certain amount of heat. When he has more food than he can eat, more clothing than needs to protect him, and he then enters upon a certain idleness which dulls his wit, his awareness, and makes him prey to difficulties which, in a less toxic state, he would have foreseen and avoided. Thus, we have a glut being a menace to the individual. It is no less different in a group. Where the group acquires too much, its awareness of its own fellows and of the environment is accordingly reduced, and the effectiveness of the group in general is lost. The maintaining of a balance between gluttony and the need is the province of economics proper, and is the fit subject and concern of the conscious state. Desire and want are a state of mind. Individuals can be educated into desiring and wanting more than they can ever possibly obtain, and such individuals are conversely unhappy. Most of the self-willed characteristics of the capitalists come entirely from greed. He exploits the worker far beyond any necessity of his own part, as a capitalist, for him to consume or to need. In a nation where economic balances are not controlled, the appetite of the individual is unduly whetted by enchanting and fanciful persuasions to desire, and a type of insanity ensues, where each individual is persuaded to possess more than he can use, and to possess it even at the expense of his fellow man. There is in economic balances the other side. Too great and too long of privation can bring about unhealthy desires which in themselves accumulate, if left action, more than the individual can use. Poverty itself, as carefully cultivated in capitalist state, can bring about an imbalance of acquisition, just as a vacuum will pull into it masses in a country where enforced privation upon the masses is permitted, and where desire is artificially whetted. Need turns to greed, and one easily discovers in such states exploitation of the many for the benefit of the few. If one, by the technologies of psychopolitics, were to dull this excessive greed in the few who possess it, the worker would be freed to seek a more natural balance. Now, here we have two extremes. Either one of them are an insanity. If we wish to create an insanity, we need only glut or deprive an individual at long length beyond the ability to withstand, and we have a mental imbalance. A simple example of this is the alteration or the alternation of too low with too high pressures in a chamber, an excellent psychopolitical procedure. The rapidly varied pressure brings about a chaos wherein the individual will cannot act, and where other wills then perform or assume control. Essentially, in an entire country, One must remove the greedy by whatever means and must then create and continue a semi-privation in the masses of people in order to command and utterly control the nation. A continuous hope for prosperity must be indoctrinated into the masses with many dreams and visions of glut of commodity, and this hope must be counterplayed against the actuality of privation and the continuous threat of loss of all economic factors in case of disloyalty to the state in order to suppress the individual wills of the masses. In a nation under conquest such as America, our slow and steady approach need take advantage only of the cycles of booms and depressions inherent in the capitalist nations in order to assert of more and more strong control over individual wills. A boom is as advantageous as a depression for our goals and ends, for during prosperity, our propaganda lines must only continue to point up the wealth the period is delivering to the selected few to divorce their control of the state. During a depression, we must only point out that it ensued as a result of the avarice of the few and the general political incompetence of the national leaders. The handling of economic propaganda is not properly the sphere of psychopolitics, but the psychopolitician must understand economic measures and communist goals connected with them. The masses must at last come to believe that only excessive taxation of the rich can relieve them of the burdensome leisure class, and can thus be brought to accept such a thing as income tax, a Marxist principle smoothly slid into the capitalist framework in 1909 in the United States. This, even though the basic law of the United States forbade this income tax, and even though communism at that time had been active only a few years in America, such successes as the income tax law, had it been followed thoroughly, could have brought the United States, not Russia, into the world scene as the first communist nation. But the virility and good sense of the Russian people's want. It may not be that the United States will become entirely communist until past the middle of the century, but when it does, it will be because of our superior understanding of economics and psychopolitics. The communist agent skilled in economics and economy has as his task the suborning of tax agencies and their personnel to create the maximum disturbance and chaos and the passing of laws adapted to our purposes, and to him we must leave this task. The psychopolitical operator plays a distinctly different role in this drama. The rich, the skilled in finance, the well-informed in government are particular and individual targets for the psychopolitician. His is the role of taking off the board those individuals who would halt or corrupt communist economic programs. Thus, every rich man, every statesman, every person well-informed and capable in government must have brought to his side as a trusted confidant a psychopolitical operator. The families of these persons are often deranged from idleness and glut, and this fact must be played upon, even created. The normal health and wildness of a rich man's son must be twisted and perverted and explained into neuroses, and then assisted by a timely administration of drugs or violence turned into criminality or insanity. This brings at once someone in mental healing into confidential contact with the family, and from this point on, the very most must then be made of that contact. Communism could best succeed if at the side of every rich or influential man there could be placed a psychopolitical operator, an undoubted authority in the field of mental healing, who could then, by his advice or through the medium of a wife or daughter, by his guided opinions, direct the optimum policy to embroil or upset the economic policies of the country, and when the time comes to do away forever with the rich or influential man, to administer the proper drug or treatment to bring about his complete demise in an institution as a patient or dead as a suicide. Planted beside a country's powerful persons, the psycho-political operator can also guide other policies to the betterment of our battle. The capitalist does not know the definition of war. He thinks of war as attack with force performed by soldiers and machines. He does not know that a more effective, if somewhat longer, war can be fought with bread, or in our case, with drugs and the wisdom of our art. The capitalist has never won a war in truth. The psychopolitician is having little trouble winning this war. Brainwashing. Psychopolitics. A synthesis of the Russian textbook. Produced in America at the Marion, Illinois Federal Penitentiary. The experiments worked here in America on American prisoners has now been exported around the world. And double back. All right, we'll be back with more tomorrow night, same station, but stand by. We'll be back with the editorial review. And after this break, in about 8 minutes, stand by, and we'll be back soon.